Do you want a weekly dose of energy and marketing tips to grow your business? Then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Lisa Pezik Show, a podcast that empowers entrepreneurs to heal and be heard, the permission to pivot, and the tools to design a life you love.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Lisa Pezik Show. I cannot wait to dive into one of the most common questions that I hear with my clients and my community. A book. Should I have one? Should I use it? Should I do it? Should I invest in these high-level coaches and products to get this book in my hand because it's going to open the doorway to everything I ever want in my business and my life? We are going to talk today whether that's true, whether that's not true, what steps you should take, and we're going to debunk all these myths around these best-selling books and books that you see. And today I have with me a fine friend named Robin Colucci. Robin, so glad you're here.
So happy to be here, Lisa.
Oh my goodness. So I know you guys can't see her if you're tuning in and listening, but Robin just has this big, beautiful smile to match her big, beautiful personality. She's got this wild hair that looks amazing with this white streak going through it. And it just shows the authenticity and the beauty and the realness of this conversation that we are just about to have. So let me tell you all about Robin. So Robin has been helping world-class experts write world-changing books since 2003. Before that, she built, grew, and sold a personal fitness business. She was also a journalist and worked as an acquisitions editor for an independent publishing house. Robin brings her deep hands-on knowledge of publishing and entrepreneurship to her clients whose books cover a range of topics, including business, personal development, memoir, health and fitness, science, technology, politics, women's issues, the environment. This woman, there ain't nothing she can't do. So I'm so glad you're here, Robin. Let's dive in. Like, let's just talk about this elephant in the room that people think the book is the key to the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Is that true or not?
Yeah, I would say overall, no, that is not the case. I think maybe it depends on how much of a kingdom you've already built. Yes. As part of that, the more of a kingdom you have, the more likely that is to be true. But yeah, I think that what you're asking is, you know, is the book the way to be successful? Is the book the way to have a business? I think the biggest misconception and frankly, disservice that's being pitched to people all over, as I know you're aware, is this idea that you need to have a book in order to have a business. Mm-hmm. And my position, based on, as you know, years of experience, is that in fact, what you need to do is have a business and then use the book as a tool to grow the business. Mm-hmm. And that is a way more appropriate way to use a book.
Mm-hmm. The book is the start. I always tell people, or somewhat the start. Yeah, go ahead, tell me.
It's a power tool. I would say like think of it this way. Like if you don't need a leaf blower if you don't have a yard.
With trees, right? You have no trees in your yard. Exactly.
You know, it's like, exactly. If you don't have any trees in your yard, you don't need a leaf blower, right? So a book can do the most good for you when you already have a thriving concern, whether that's a business or a foundation or something going on where people are already paying attention, hopefully people are already buying something from you, it would be ideal. And where you have real on the ground experience in the area that you're writing about.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've seen happen way too often, and really, Lisa, this is, I literally have sent away hundreds of people who have come to me over the years with this very situation. Like they just started out as a coach, or they are corporate refugees, right? Like they have a lot of experience, but they've done it in a different context. So that maybe they were an HR director, now they're going to be a life coach, right? I mean, maybe there's some crossover there of skill, but they actually haven't done the coaching business.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they're just starting completely from scratch and they don't really have anything going on. And they get this idea in their head that what they need to do is have a best-selling, I'm doing quotey marks here,
mm-hmm.
book, and that's going to change everything. And the fact is that is just flatly false, completely yeah. false. And the disservices, and the thing that really pisses me off mm-hmm. and gets me fired up, is that when they buy into, like you mentioned in our brief conversation before we started the interview, about like they're buying into these $15,000 Amazon bestseller programs to turn their self-published
into success,
book that they yes. wrote without, you know, like into a Amazon bestseller, and that's somehow going to fix everything. The thing that I think is the biggest disservice that a lot of people aren't aware of is the level of distraction and self-delusion that it mm-hmm. creates. And the most damaging thing for someone in that situation, you know, you think about it, your average coach earns $25,000 a year on average.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to put 15,000 of it into a campaign to have a book. Well, the bigger problem isn't what they're doing with the book. It's what they're not doing to grow their business while they're working on that book. And that's where the delusion that is, that could literally be fatal to their business comes in.
Ooh, I just got like truth bumps. I got goosebumps there. I love what you said, the distraction and the self-delusion. That time is so precious. And that time that you could be putting towards sales, referrals, connecting.
Thank you. Exactly. Getting referrals.
That, yes.
Asking for sale, you know, right. Making sales, bringing money into your business, getting on the ground experience, all of that. The people who are buying into those programs too soon, they feel busy. They feel productive, and they go to bed at night, every night, thinking they're helping their business. And what they're doing is mortgaging their business.
That is such a great perspective. Like, oh, that might have hit some of you listening right in the chest, but that is exactly why I wanted Robin to talk about this, because man, you know, I see it, Robin, in our business, people come to us. I got to make money. I have this book, but I don't have any money. And they're like, yeah. how cheap can you basically like provide leads for us? And we're like, we don't, you know, well, I spent $15,000, or I spent $10,000, or $20,000. You know, I spent it on this thing. And now what?
Yeah. Now they're out of money. They're out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And all they have is a book that no one's going to read because they don't have any resources to promote it.
Mm-hmm. And kudos to you for literally saying you turn people away. You're not just going to take their money knowing that the book isn't going to go anywhere, because it's not them. It's not that their story sucks or their business sucks, or it's not the right time.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
One thing I did do is we created a program to help people write a booklet, so that if they're in that kind of a situation, they can write and produce and launch a booklet in a very short amount of time at a lower price point. But I created that whole thing because writing a full-length book and spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to get it off the ground is just ridiculous. And, you know, even, listen, not even everyone's ready for the booklet program. You know, I mean, I really think you don't just want to look at like, can I do this one step? You got to look at the whole picture. You know, before you commit to any kind of action around a book, because it's one of those things where if you can't do everything to get it all the way over the finish line, then just wait and do other things. I had my book writing coaching business for 10 years before I wrote my book.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point of reference for you.
Tell you how many people say to me, you need a business book, Lisa, you need a business book, you need a business. And it's been kicking around in my head for a couple of years, but I relate it back to TED. Like everybody that's a speaker right. wants to be a TED speaker, right? Like that's the holy grail of, you've made it, I guess, in the holy grail of speaking, right? But I think about why TED was created and TEDx. It was ideas worth sharing.
Yeah.
Not, right. I just want to have this noteworthy, say I had a TED talk, get on the little red circle and do my thing. So for me, I'm like, I'm not going to write a business book until I have that solid foundational. This is really what I feel like is going to provide value to the world. And I want to research it. I want to get feedback. I want to get the right help. Could I write a business book this year? Maybe not this year, but well, maybe, who knows? But could I write a business book, you know, now? Absolutely. I have the tools, the money, the resources. It's not a matter of, can I? It should I? And I think in a lot of these best-selling things, it's, well, everybody has a story to tell and everybody should be telling their story. And yes and no, right? Yes and no.
Yeah, I've been asked many times the question, do you think everyone has a book in them? And I say, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I do not think that everyone has a book in them. I think lots of people do. I think plenty of people do, for all of us to be very busy in the book world. But really, first of all, not everyone has the desire to write a book. And if you don't have that feeling, that desire, then you definitely don't have a book in you. And that's fine. There's other ways of expression. But then taking it to the next step is, and I think what you're getting at is, what's the strategy? And this is something that we work with all of our clients on this. You know, why are you writing the book? Now, if your listeners are like anything like the people that somehow make it into my universe, the first thing people want to talk about when I ask them why they want to write the book is how they want to help others, right? I mean, and that's, and it's noble and it's fabulous and I support that. And you've got to also have clear reasons, like what's in it for you, you know, why your business, what initiatives, what's the next level for you that requires a book? Because there are things, there are times where it is important that you put your stick in the ground and say, this is my domain. This is where I'm a leader. This is my thing, my position. You know, my book was How to Write a Book That Sells You. I put that to draw a line in the sand to say, you know what? It's not all about selling books as like copies of your book. What it's about is, can you produce something that pulls people into your business, that pulls people towards you who would be ideal clients for you to work with? Because that's really where the payoff is,
yes,
especially for coaches, consultants, course creators. That's where the money is. Screw the book sales. That's, I call that like, you know, that's like going out to dinner money. Of course, I said that before.
COVID. Yes, I agree.
That's takeout money. That's Uber Eats money.
I agree.
That should not be, one analogy I've used is like, your book sale should be like the money you spend at a nice restaurant.
Yeah.
But what you can create with your book is going to buy you the Bentley that you're driving to the restaurant.
10%. I don't know if I'm right in thinking it this way, but I always thought of a book as like a business card. It's a way, I mean, deeper than a business card.
I have a great rebuttal to the book as a business card.
Oh, okay. So not a business card in a sense that, I think of it as a business card in a sense that you want people to get to know you, how you can help them, and then you want them to go further with it.
Right.
But the book is not the final
destination. Here's what I would say. I get where you're coming from. I think that you understand the essence of that idea. But the thing about calling a book a business card is the thing that really, again, I get fired up about some of these. This is another.
That's why I have you here. Please.
This podcast could be the things that piss Robin off. We could just call it that.
I love it.
Robin's rant. There we go.
There that's it is.
All right. So, but really what the problem, the thing that when that was a really hot phrase, I don't know, like 10, 15 years
ago. Oh, was it? I don't even know
why. Oh yeah. Everyone was saying, well, you know, a book is just a big business card. And the thing that really probably got in my craw was the word just. Because it completely misses the point. And I think when people took that attitude of like a book is just a big business card, what they're really saying is it doesn't matter what the content is. I just need to have a stack of them on my table when I'm sponsoring an event where people can just walk by and take one of my books home. Or I need to be able to stand up at the front of the room and say, look at me, here's my book. I'm an author, check it out. Well, the problem with that is it's completely missing the point. And I was furious about it because of the damage that it does to our ability to count on having quality books to read.
That's it.
If nobody's worried about the content, if everybody's like, well, it's just a big business card. And here's what I always say when I hear people use that phrase. I just have one question. How many business cards have you taken to bed?
Yeah, none.
None. And how many books are on your bedside table right now?
I have 3 books on my bedside table right now.
There you go. Right. Now, this is not by accident. And this is something so like, think about that for a second. What that means is that our books, we allow into our most intimate spaces.
Mm-hmm.
People, not everyone lets their TV in their space. Not everyone brings their phone into their intimate spaces. Everyone I've ever asked has books by their bedside.
Yes.
Okay. And there's a reason for that. It's because books are a portal to intimacy.
Mm.
And I don't know any other way that you're going to get 6 solid hours of undivided attention from another human being in bed or anywhere else.
Yeah. Right, on a vacation, in your suitcase.
Yeah. Right. So think about that for a second. This person who has your book has invited you into their most intimate space for 6 hours of conversation. Are you going to honor them or not? Because if you write a shitty book,
yep.
If it's just a big business card and the content doesn't matter, you are dishonoring that trust and you're missing a massive opportunity, because this is where the book sets the stage for that ideal client to enter your life, for you to be able to provide. Listen, if you're a coach or consultant and you write a really good book, not only will you get more clients because you can use it to get more clients, but you can charge more.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've probably given them all the fundamentals in the book. So now you don't have to waste time on your coaching calls giving them the stuff you tell everyone, and you can just get right into their specific needs. That's how you use a book to grow your income, double your freaking rates.
Right.
Right. Because now you've doubled the value of what the person's getting by with the time you're able to spend. Do you know how many books you'd have to sell to get that equivalent? You'd have to sell 100,000 books a year.
Yeah. I know some authors are like, never, you know, always have at least 30 copies of your book, you know, in your car. And I'm like, oh.
Why? So you can assault people with it? Here, have my book. I mean.
Or do a book signing. No, people go in for very specific needs in a bookstore.
Yeah. If you're Michelle Obama, do a book signing, because people will line up around the block for miles away and wait to buy your book. But yeah, for the most authors, and I do think public speaking is one of the most tried and true ways to sell your book, no matter who you are, as long as you can pull an audience together.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, look at what we're talking about. This is why you don't start with the book. If you don't have an audience to pull, if you don't have the connections to fill a room, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Build those connections.
So who are the ideal people that you work with? Who is the sweet spot? Hallelujah. Thank you. Yes, let's do this.
I'd say there's kind of 2 different key types of people. There's one that is like the highly accomplished thought leader type, like CEO, you know, C-suite executive of a major company, or a leading scientist, or an astronaut, you know, that kind of. Mm. Those kinds of notable folks, you know, and maybe just somebody who's like doing something really interesting. It doesn't have to be, but you know, they've been at it for a while. I think that's the key. Most of the people we work with privately, I'm really hard pressed to think of anyone we've worked with privately who's been doing something less than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really, you have to have some real experience behind you to draw upon. And so, you know, some of these people are already notable in the media and they just haven't gotten around to the book. Others are unknown, but generally very well known in their silos, like their peers, their colleagues know who they are, even if the general public doesn't yet. And then the others would be the people who, in a way, who like serve those people. So we also do a lot of work with consultants and coaches who are working also with those C-suite level people or those founders to help them become better leaders or help them run more profitable organizations or whatever it is. And mm-hmm. So we do a lot of work in that space with people like that. So those would be the 2 main areas.
Yeah, I think about my mentor, Voisin, who just came out with a book and it was like a 7-time, you know, New York Times bestseller. And that's like the story that he tells is like, he never wanted to write a book. Like he had no interest in writing it. He didn't want to be an author. Like he didn't even think he could write. And his book's amazing, like amazing, amazing message, amazing story, amazing how to, you know, as you said, super known in his silo, super successful already. And I find that's a lot of times that people that have a lot of resistance to doing it put out the best books, as opposed to the, you know, I want to be a New York Times bestselling author and I want to be on Oprah and I want to be, you know, it's like, yeah.
I call it the American Idol effect. Like, I used to watch American Idol a lot in the early 2000s. And one pattern I noticed, and I probably noticed because I'm also a singer, like I sing in a rock band.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, okay. She drops that bomb. Oh, by the way, I sing a rock band too. Okay, we're going to come back to that.
I'm into singing and I like to watch singers. And one thing I noticed about American Idol is it's like the best singers were always the ones who were like really humble. And they were like, I didn't want to come, but all my friends said I had to, and I hope you like this. And then they open their mouth and it's like, but you know, the ones that were like, I'm amazing, you're going to be so grateful that I should, like, those were always the ones who clearly had only sung in the shower, never had recorded themselves once.
Yeah. And there's a real humility when it comes to writing books and seeing it through. Cause it can be quite a process, right? Yeah. To see it through.
It is a process. And it's, but you know, I'll tell you, I think the process, one of the hidden things that people don't necessarily recognize until after their book is done, and if they've done it right, which is what we're talking about, Lisa, where you're really taking the time to think it through and make sure you're providing real, tangible, deep value. I think that becoming an author, we know, has a certain gravitas to it, right? It always has. And, you know, hopefully it always will. Mm-hmm. I think that what people don't always understand is it's not because you have the book that you can hold up in front of the room. That is not what provides that extra oomph to your credibility. It's because of the process that you went through to write it.
Mm.
Because the inquiry, what I found in working with our clients, it makes you a better expert. It makes you more clear about what you actually believe. It makes you better able to articulate what that is and communicate it to people in a way that they can get it. And it helps you to synthesize, take all these years of experience and synthesize it from this, you know, to be able to understand it from a holistic point of view that you can then impart that extra value and insight that you gained from that.
Mm.
The best analogy that I can give for this would be that it's like, you know, if you go and you do the 20 years or whatever it is of education to get a PhD,
mm-hmm.
you get a diploma, but the diploma isn't the thing. It's not the PhD. The PhD is the work that you did to earn the diploma. So having a book isn't what gives you the authority. Having a book is the evidence.
Mm.
Like a diploma is evidence that you went through a process that made you better, that made you smarter, that made you a more viable expert.
Mm-hmm. I love that. The book is the evidence. The book is the evidence.
It's not the thing. It's the evidence mm-hmm. that you have something, that you've been through something that transformed you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, what about people that love to write? Like I think about Elizabeth Gilbert, and I read a book by her, and she was talking about how some books she writes are epic and other books are just complete shit. And, you know, she could write this, you know, Eat, Pray, Love. And then she was talking about how her next book like completely bombed. And, but she said, you know, she'll always come home to writing because writing is what she does. And to me, that makes me think about that evidence too, like that it matters to you and you're not going to quit, whether you get a crappy review or a great review, or because that's sometimes a reality, right? In putting your work, I think it can be scary sometimes to put your work out there for people to say they like it, don't like it, because differing opinions, you know, are do a lot of your authors, do they worry about that? Do they worry they're going to put their best foot forward and then everyone's going to say it sucks?
Yeah, I think everyone has that, and no matter how accomplished you are, I think everyone's a little scared of, you know, and the thing about books is, talk about the internet is forever. Like, the books are in print. You
know? Yeah.
You can't take it back.
Right?
Somebody's going to have a copy of it somewhere, right? So, you know, there's a couple of things that I thought of when you were presenting that question. And one is that you don't have to be a writer to be an author. Most of my clients do not think of themselves as writers, and they don't necessarily love writing.
Mm.
They just understand that they have a message that they have to get out. And so if you don't think of yourself as a writer, you can be an author. Just get some help, get good help. But like I said, most of the people that I work with are not writers, and they've mm-hmm. written outstanding books. So you don't have to have that.
Mm.
But that said, you know, I think that this is why it's so important to get outside feedback, because, you know, self-publishing has made it so anyone can have a book, which is both wonderful and horrible at the same time. And we do work with self-published authors. We don't only work with traditionally published authors. My philosophy is your book should be so good that people shouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Mm.
And that's inside and out. So everything about the design should look equivalent to a traditionally published book, and everything about the content should be like I should be able to have one of my publishing house editor friends read it and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that they self-published this. I would love to have had this, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Like nobody should be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
And that really requires having outside feedback, because if there's one thing I can tell you is, like singing,
yep.
It's, you know, actually even harder. It's harder to judge your writing objectively, I think, even than your musicianship, because you can record that and, you know, like, yeah. A sour note is very obvious. While, you know, if you're not a writer, I mean, even writers don't try to judge their own work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hemingway, every great writer you've ever heard of had an editor who saved their butt.
Yep.
I promise you.
Yeah. I once heard a coach say, Roger Love, who's like a famous voice coach for the Stars. He said, you can't be a writer and an editor at the same time. And he was talking about Elton John's guy who writes his music.
Yeah.
And right. He was like, how long does it take you to, like, you know, write a song for Elton John? And he's like, I just get an idea and I just go, like, you know, I start writing. And then I just give it to Elton John and I say, take what you want from it. And he's like, you know, 85% of it is cut, and that 15% is the song that you hear that's produced. He doesn't write the first verse and then go, oh, that sucks, and I got to change this, and then write this. And then he just lets it flow and then lets Elton John pick what he likes from it. And he has no attachment to it. Right. And that's,
yeah.
That's it.
It was a very successful collaboration too. So
mm-hmm.
yeah. And I think that not only just like picking out the good stuff, but it's also about when we're writing something, and this is true for, I think, anybody, since we have all the background of what we're trying to say in our minds also, you can think you said what you meant, but but you didn't. It was your first attempt. A lot of times, if you're really approaching writing a book the right way, you should be saying things in your book you've never said. So you haven't practiced saying them. and you're probably operating through a way of being that's conveying that thing, but you've never actually articulated it before. And writing a book is a great opportunity to take those things that are just part of your modus operandi and be able to express them in words. And the cool thing, and again, this talks about how writing a book grows your business.
Yep.
Because then you have that superpower. You can now communicate that idea over and over and over again in multiple contexts.
Yeah.
Right? A speech, an online course, right? Yep. Like, you can now communicate this messaging in a coherent way because you've already done that.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. I always tell people it's a framework. When you have a framework or a system or a process, absolutely. You can write it in a book. You can speak it on a stage. You can teach it on a webinar. You know, that's when sometimes you don't know when the big opportunity is going to call and you don't want to be not ready. So yeah. Exactly like you said, when you have the evidence and you have the process, you're ready.
Exactly. Oh.
I love
exactly.
that. Now,
and you can express it in this coherent way, right? Where you're not, because what's the worst is like, well, you know, I did a internet radio show before podcasting started. If I had just continued it, I would literally be queen of the world right now, I'm sure. But I stopped doing it. But I would have authors on and interview them. And I would ask them sometimes, you know, so what's your book about? And then they would go into like a 30-minute monologue. And, you know, that tells me they didn't do enough work on their concept.
Or how many times do you get on connecting calls and people go, but what exactly is it that you do? It's like that, right? After you hear somebody talk. But wait, what exactly do you do? How exactly do you help people?
Yeah. That should be a one sentence answer.
Yep. 100%. So my listeners that have books, because I know there are many that have shelves and shelves of copies of books, and they didn't go about it the right way because they didn't know any better, or they were, you know, led astray, or they thought that the $20,000 in the book or however much they spent, is there any hope for them? What should they do? What advice can we give those listeners that are going?
Well, listen, if you've written a book and I don't, you know, and published it, you're still a special person. I mean, because most people don't. And, you know, out of the 80% of the population of the United States at any given moment who thinks they're going to write a book one day, less than 1% actually does it. So if you got that far, you know, the first thing to do is just be proud that you did what you did. And I would say that if it's not, you know, if the book isn't selling, I think there's a couple of questions to ask yourself. One is, how can I use my book to grow my business? Mm-hmm. You know, because you can leverage it. If you just give up the idea that you need to make your money back on book sales, because that is a really low paying, arduous, you know, hell of a way to go. But think about, first of all, I guess the first question is this a book I'm proud of? Like, can I stand behind this book and be like, yeah, buddy, you got to read this because this is awesome. Like, do I still feel that way? Because if you're not proud of the book, you're not going to be able to really do much. And there's a reason. And it means you've evolved past it, or you know, whatever it is. So, and really, you know, how could you repurpose it, right? Is there content that maybe you could utilize in some way? If you've really outgrown it and you'd still like to use a book, you know, there's really nothing wrong with looking at your situation and saying, okay, but now am I ready? I'm in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, listen, if the worst financial decision you ever made was spending $20,000 on a book that you shouldn't have, then you're doing way better than me. I have made far worse financial decisions that cost me way more money than that.
Same.
So, you know, don't beat yourself up, but really think about, like, do I need a book? Does it make sense for me to have a book strategically? And if it does, then write another one, because you got something out of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it didn't give you everything that you dreamed and hoped for. And, you know, one of the things that I think makes me the most upset about, you know, people being pressured or misguided into doing a book too soon is that I really believe that if you write a book, you should be in love with that book for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Even if you've evolved past it, you should be like, you know what, for the time, like for what I knew, I'm so proud of what I did. And I don't like that anybody would be robbed of that. Mm-hmm. And when they've been given a lot of false hope about what they think the book should do for them, then a lot of times they end up resentful about the book. And I think that is a tragedy. You know, we have to understand what books really are. Is writing a book is like being pregnant.
Mm.
Putting the book out in the world is like giving birth. Now, how well do babies do if that's the last thing you do?
They don't
thrive.
Not so good.
No, you have to nurture a baby. You have to feed a baby. You have to take the baby out and socialize it.
Yeah.
You have to love the baby. You have to talk about the baby every day. You have to have lots of pictures of the baby. You have to, okay, if you want people to know about your book, you've got to understand that once it's born, the work is just starting.
Yes. I love that reality and that hope of the work was never lost. Even if the finished product isn't something that you want to carry on with, take the good from the process and now go and do it again.
Yeah.
And then if you've got something that you're super proud of, like your baby, tell people about it everywhere you go. And then listen to Robin's advice on how to do it the right way, how to have realistic goals and processes and systems.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, that's why you hire someone like Robin, or that's why you, if Robin's not the right one, it's why you go and you get help from the right people, right?
Yeah. And one thing I just like to throw into that, because one of the pieces of advice I give people all the time, and they're like, how should I promote my book? I'm like, what do you know you should be doing to promote your business, but you're not doing?
Yep.
Because never promote a book just to promote the book. Or what are you already doing to promote your business that you need to do more of? Or what are you already doing to promote your business that you could somehow incorporate your book? Because just promoting the book for the sake of the promoting the book is never going to pay off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It goes back to strategy.
99.9% of the people is never going to, there's always the outliers, but I have yet to win the Powerball. So maybe I'll change my mind.
Tell me as we wrap here though. So you sing in a band?
Yes, ma'am.
A rock band.
Yes.
Oh my. So tell me, like, how did that start? And like, what, like, is this just like, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I've always been, I know this will become as a shock, I've always been a performer.
You know.
I've always had that ham in me, and I've explored many different avenues. I did some straight theater and musical theater, improv comedy, stand-up comedy, you know, just playing with my acoustic guitar on open mic nights and whatever. Nice. So I've done lots of stuff, and when I moved back to Connecticut 4 years ago, I knew that there was a school of rock. And so I immediately signed up for electric guitar lessons, because I'd owned an electric Fender Stratocaster for years, but I never played it. I just bought it because it was pretty. And so my daughter had played it more than me. And so I signed up for electric guitar lessons at School of Rock. And then I got into their adult band program. And then they figured out I could sing. And then I ended up singing more than playing guitar. And then some of us went off and formed our own band.
Nice.
So
what's that looking like in COVID though? Are you doing like virtual shows?
We're doing a lot of rehearsing.
There you go. Yeah. And that's a good theme right now. It's like, get better at your craft.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
I love that.
We have our, we're all very careful, and we have our own little socially distanced rehearsal structure, and you know, each of us is sheltered at home anyway, so we're doing well,
but still putting goodness out. I love that so much. Robin, how can they best get a hold of you if they want more information or want to connect further with you?
RobinColucci.com.
Awesome.
Is the way to find me, and we have an application there that they can fill out if they're interested in having a conversation with me or someone on my team about what it might look like for them. And does it, you know, like, listen, if it doesn't make sense for you to do a book, we will tell you. And we'll also tell you specifically what you would need to do in order for it to make sense.
I love that. Always leading with service. Giving people good advice. Amazing, amazing. Don't worry, I will put that in the show notes if they're not sure how to spell your last name or how to get in contact. I will have it there. Robin, thank you so much for sharing your, and just being so generous with your stories and your teachings, and just having a real talk with me around something that I get asked a ton of questions about. So thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. And it's always a pleasure to chat with you, Lisa.
Awesome. All right, listeners, thank you so much for being here. We value your time. Please follow up with Robin if you have any further questions. And as always, thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on The Lisa Pezik Show.
You've been listening to The Lisa Pezik Show. Let's connect more at www.lisapezik.com.